Hello, everybody, again, and congratulations. We've made it to the last session of the day, so thank you very much. We're going to finish with a panel discussion here. So the session will cover collateral issues and the APA program, looking at how APA, the APA program is exploring and expanding into different collateral issues and how that's working. Today, we're fortunate to have Vitran, Assistant Commissioner in the International Tax Structuring Branch with Public Group's business line of the ATO, together with Jason Vella, Transfer Pricing Partner at EY, and Glenn Hutchings, Transfer Pricing Partner at KPMG. So we're going to kick off, Vi will come up and make some comments just to get us all started, and then there'll be a panel discussion. The guys have encouraged, asked me to mention, to encourage you all to ask questions throughout. I'm very happy to take questions as we go, so just pop your hand up or send one through on the app and I will ask the panel as we go. Vi, over to you.
Thank you, and hi everyone. Great to be here in person and really glad to have received the invitation to come speak today. Now, whilst I could not make some of the earlier sessions, I did see the topic list and it all looked super interesting, and I'm sure it was an enthralling presentation and discussion amongst the group. Now, Glenn, Jason and I were noted down to have a panel discussion, but given we're the last session of the day, we do want to make it interactive, so we would encourage everyone to think about the questions that they might have, and we're happy to take questions during our conversation, but also during the presentation itself. So I thought I'd just start with some opening comments just to set the scene in terms of the APA program. I assume everyone is aware of what the APA program is. So with that, I might just do a bit of a snapshot in terms of giving you some broad numbers around the APA program. Now, I'm not going to go through all the numbers, but I did want to highlight a few things. So firstly, that first row there, which is APAs in progress. What you'll see there is those are the APAs that are either currently in early engagement or actually under negotiation at the moment. You can see that those numbers are actually quite high. So if in 2023, that's approximately 84 open APAs that are going through the system. The 2024 numbers, we're still, I guess, going through the collation and validating those numbers, but they haven't changed too much. So what I'd say is that represents quite a significant investment from the tax office into the program, and we do see it as being something that is particularly valuable to the community, the tax community, and it is something that we are investing significant resources into. The next notable line that I wanted to draw out is about the APA requests. So that is in the fourth row there. What you'll see there is actually on a year-by-year basis, we are seeing a lot of variability in that, and that reflects a number of factors, but probably the two key factors, at least in the last few years, has been the cyclicality of APAs in themselves. So they're typically for 5 years. A lot of the APAs that we have coming through the system are renewals, and that means that there's that inherent cyclicality built into the requests themselves. And then you'll see that in 2022, we do see quite a significant spike there. That is a reflection of COVID. We saw the numbers drop significantly during the COVID years. And coming out of COVID, we did see a big spike. So what I'd say is that's probably a once-off in terms of that big uptick in terms of numbers. Again, the 2024 numbers haven't kind of fully been validated, but I can say that they are down from the 2023 numbers. We're going through the process of understanding that. I expect that some of that is due to that cyclicality, but we also expect that some of that is due to the nature of the recommendations that we released last year and kind of shifting our focus on particular types of applicants as well. The final thing that I wanted to draw out is really around our cycle times. So we'll see that the cycle times have, aside from the multilateral APAs, which of which there are only a few, so that number is can change from year to year quite violently. But the other two numbers have been, I guess, relatively steady. What I'd say is that is something that we are really focused on in terms of driving down that cycle time. We've put in a lot of governance changes to the program in order to improve the client experience and kind of drive down efficiencies through the APA process itself. Now, this is next slide. It's just a little bit of a recap in terms of the recommendations that we published last year, and that came out of a review process the best part of 12 to 18 months before we were concluded that review process. I'm not going to go through this again because we have kind of spoken to the market at length at this, and this is also published on our website, but that's just a little bit of a recap in terms of some of the things that we sought to recalibrate through our review process. And the next slide here is, again, a point of a comparison. So this is based on the numbers that we were able to obtain in terms of official publications of numbers. We are aware of some other numbers that our bilateral partners have told us about, but we've kind of not put this in the slide deck because they're not published or official numbers. And what you can see here is that the data for Australia on a peer-to-peer comparison perspective does look quite favourable for the tax office, both in terms of cycle times, but also in terms of the number of APAs received and the numbers that we're actually completing as well. So on a GDP basis, as you can appreciate, we are getting through quite a number of them, and we are getting through them significantly in better time in comparison to some of our peers. The other thing I wanted to note here is that, interestingly, whilst we went through our a review process of our APA program, and that concluded last year, wasn't coordinated, but a couple of our treaty partners also were going through a similar review process, and they've also released public guidance around that, and that's notably the US and Canada. The US released their guidance before we did. I think it was probably 2 or 3 months before we released our guidance, and then the Canadians, I think, released their guidance approximately 4 or 5 months after we did. And whilst we did speak to each other, we didn't. I guess at the time we didn't know that the US and the Canadians were also going through their own review process. And this is, some of the things that I wanted to note is that what we saw in terms of the publication of the guidance was that there were a lot of common themes. And some of those common themes I've listed there, which is a preference for bilateral APAs. I will say that we spoke to quite a number of treaty partners, and I will say that Australia is an outlier in terms of doing unilaterals. So our prior portfolio of unilaterals accounted for approximately 50% of all of our APAs, whereas in comparison to our peers, they did very few unilaterals. And whilst it's not here, the general trend, at least from what we see from clients, is that over time, there is a preference for bilateral. So we've seen that through the request as well, is that unilaterals have remained relatively steady, and where the increase that we're seeing in terms of demand is for bilateral APAs. And that's been organic. Some of the other kind of common themes is that, the language maybe is not exactly saying that it's more complex APAs, but there's certainly a preference to deal with more significant and complex issues. And then also there are limitations in terms of acceptances of really small transactions. And the last two points there are around, there has been a little bit of a recalibration around that there's no immediate rights to access the program. So rights of omission has been kind of front and center in terms of both the Canadian and the IRS guidance as well. And that last point, which is that meetings are not conducted on a no-names basis, I think that's been a something that the tax office is pretty keen on as well, so I thought I'd kind of draw that out. The next slide here is really, again, just a graphic representation of cycle times. I'm not going to labour this point because I've kind of mentioned it in the prior slide already. But you can see there, Australia cycle times is, at least on the publicly available information, the best of those kind of peer comparisons. Now, the next slide here is just kind of touching on some of the governance improvements, which we're hoping to be published in a fairly soon. So one of the things that we've really focused on is around governance of the program, and one of those key components of that is the composition, the operation of APA panels. And what I'd characterise it as essentially two types of panels. One is the entry panel, and we've sought to ensure that the composition of that panel appropriately reflects the intention of that panel, which is really to focus around the entry criteria and identifying whether there's any particular hurdles to admitting the applicant into the APA program. And then after that, once you're in the program, again, we've ensured that the composition of the panel, once you're in the program, appropriately reflects that, which is a greater emphasis and focus on transfer pricing issues and seeking to find a way forward and resolve those transfer pricing conversations in a efficient and timely manner as well. And then in terms of the updates to the PSLA, I think last time I was at the TIA, I'd ambitiously said that we were hoping to publish at the start of this year. We haven't met those timeframes. The reason for that is that we've kind of sought to address some of these teething issues that we saw throughout the program. We didn't want to publish it if things weren't working as intended, so we've kind of sought to address that through the ongoing and real-time updates to the PSLA. With that, having said that, we think we're in a position to publish shortly, and we hope that that can be coming out in the next couple of weeks. Now, just looking, no questions as yet, I've only got a few more slides left. So a commitment from the tax office has really been around ongoing feedback about the program, where we're actively going out there and seeking feedback from clients and advisors around how they feel the program is going. So approximately after 12 months after the recommendations, we sought to do targeted consultation with some of our key stakeholders in the program. Fair to say that feedback was a little bit mixed. Now, for the most part, we did hear a lot of positive things. So some of those positive things have been around entry criteria, the fact that that's much more clearer and transparent. Whilst it wasn't something that we sought to ask of advisors and clients, but we have seen that filter through the early engagement process and application process, where we have seen applications specifically address the entry criteria, and that's really been welcomed by the APA Program Management Unit, because that has really truncated a lot of the questions that we might typically ask or put back to clients and advisors, and that's hopefully what that will do is it'll make the early engagement process a lot more efficient, and that's in the interest of all parties, I would say. But no doubt there were teething issues, and I definitely saw this come through in the first 6 months, so we're alive to that. A lot of this related to the treatment and consistency around how we're viewing collateral issues, also around the timeliness and extensiveness of the lines of inquiry during that time. So what I'd say is that I did, get a lot more involved than I thought I would, but we think it's in a good place. So what I've heard is that the more recent experience has been a lot more positive. We think that we've addressed a lot of those teething issues, and we hope that moving forward, that early engagement process is going to be a better experience for clients, but also for the tax office specifically as well. And this is a little bit of the last kind of the last slide I'm going to put up there, and this is really to prompt the conversation. We're cognizant that we're at the last session in the day, so we do want to make sure that we have plenty of conversation. And on the left-hand side, we've got a list of things that or themes that we think corporates are looking for in terms of the program. And then on the right-hand side, we've got some of the things that the ATO is trying to address through the program as well. And if we had this in a nice Venn diagram, you could see that some of those themes do cross over and align, some more so than others, but perhaps some are not in full alignment. So we thought that putting this up there, maybe we'll leave it up there to prompt some conversation. But with that, hopefully we can get kick off with some questions from the audience. Otherwise, Glenn, Jason, and I are happy to talk amongst ourselves as well. So if we've got a roaming mic, I think we've got a lot of people online. So if we can get a microphone to young gentleman over here, and I'll duck back down. Yeah.
With regards to mutual obligations, transparency, etc., I suppose just wondering what the ATO is hoping to, I suppose, see with regards to behaviours from taxpayers who are wanting to be on the APA program.
Thanks for the question. I think the importance of relationship is critical to the APA program. We view it as a voluntary program that's built on mutual trust and cooperation and transparency. That's really important for the program, but it goes beyond just the program itself. So it extends to our other engagements with the client. So what we want to be clear about is that clients shouldn't be picking and choosing how they engage depending on the types of engagement. And that doesn't mean that if you've got an audit ongoing that that precludes you from the APA program. It's a matter of how you're engaging in that process, which is important, right? So if it's a constructive and transparent and cooperative process, I think those are the types of things that we're looking for the program. And this really comes off the back of some of the things that were identified during the APA review process itself around, and I'd say like it's not, you know, widespread, but we took the point on board that there can be instances where clients felt that the APA program was a quasi-audit and the line of inquiry was particularly intense. What I would say is that if you're in the program, you should accept that there will be questions, right? So there will always be questions. Asking questions doesn't mean that it's an order environment, but we do want that, you know, that process to be built, as I said, on mutual trust and transparency and cooperation. So that's really important for the offers. So I'll stop there, and maybe if Jason or Glenn have other comments as well.
Thanks for that.
I think from my perspective, I mean, that's similar experience in terms of the conduct of the taxpayer and the way in which they engage with the tax office. It doesn't just start when you're looking to seek for an APA. It's obviously something that's considered in other products that the ATO may have running. I think once you get into the, once you're applying for an APA, I think there's a lot of, you try to highlight or work through collateral issues. You know, if you've got potential collateral issues, being able to identify them early and present a position in regards to it, I think makes a lot of sense, and certainly I think is welcomed by the tax office. I think it's also just the tone that you set in terms of how you prepare information. Try to in a way drive the process somewhat rather than be reactionary. I think a lot of that, again, I think highlights to, or sends a signal at least to the tax office as to that the taxpayer's committed to the process.
Might just add to that as well. maybe also a bit of backdrop in terms of behaviours, because behaviours does change over time and it will change moving forward. So I think the first APA in the world was done back in the 90s and the ATO was actually a participant in that. So that just shows you the long-standing commitment of the ATO to this program. And certainly the previous commissioners, Carmody, DeSenjo and Jordan, all were committed to the program and it was very, very well resourced. So late 90s, for example, ATO was doing lots of APAs, whereas many other developed jurisdictions were not doing APAs at all. So you actually didn't have a product to go to seek resolution. Things obviously change as evolving expectations of the community, and certainly with BEPS 1, that certainly changed the way the APA program has been managed, right? So there was a much broader expectation around the behaviours of corporates. So before BEPS 1, it was like, yep, we've got to resolve the transfer pricing question. After BEPS 1, it was very much a broader context, which is, yes, there's a transfer pricing question to resolve, but also we need to think about the other elements of the structuring and collateral issues, as Jason's mentioned. And so that brings us to today, where we're in a world of, you have probably a lot of interactions if you're in the large end of the market with the ATO. You may not have a lot of interactions if you're in the medium or smaller end of the market. You've got a cross-border issue. It's complicated. And you're thinking about, well, do I walk in and talk to the ATO to try to resolve it, right? That's the question. And if you're going into the CEO or CFO's office, depending on what level you're at, and asking for funding, yeah, there's a question around, well, where does that take you? I mean, and you want that process to be successful, right? And the best successful process is one where your behaviours is very open and transparent in this day and age, right? So if you want a successful process, you've got to be open and transparent. Vi mentioned there's a sort of entry panel early on in the process, right? And clearly you need to get through that, and there's a lot of questions. And you've got to manage that because you're managing your resource and your budgets, there's no doubt about it. The second part of that really, though, is you're in the APA program, right? And you should be genuinely trying to resolve what is a cross-border complicated issue, right? If it's not a complicated issue, you probably shouldn't be in the APA program. So it's a complicated issue. I want to get resolution and assurance over it. You should be thinking about, I know a good answer, and I want to work with the ATO and also the other treaty partner to try to resolve this complicated pricing issue. And if you come at it from that angle, that's your sense of purpose in the program, that will lead you to the most successful route, because you're bringing solutions to the table. You've probably heard that one: don't bring me problems, bring me solutions. You're bringing solutions to the table. You're advocating to both authorities. You're bringing ideas, but you're also giving them room for them to bring their ideas to the table. Those are the behaviours that ultimately lead to the most successful program, and also perhaps the timing of it as well. The less investment you put in, sometimes the timing does blow out. Vi's slide there to talk about timings. It'd be great if they're all done within 24 months. Unfortunately, that's not the space where we're in. But then again, they are complicated issues.
I've got a question for you. As we see more collateral issues being raised across the program, what are the type of issues that people are raising and asking to be resolved or considered through the APA program over the last 12 months? Not sure, Vi, if you're best to...
Yeah, I mean, inherently, the APA program is for transfer pricing issues, right? So they all involve transfer pricing issues with varying degrees of complexity and significance. I think, I guess in the context of this conversation, because there are cross-border issues, they will cross over into potentially other types of tax issues or other types of transfer pricing issues which weren't part of the original application itself. So what I would say is, you know, if we can kind of think of collateral issues in a simplistic way, I'd define it as transfer pricing collateral issues, and that's where the applicant comes to the office, tax office, and presents a particular transaction for the APA program. The tax office looks at it and says, yes, you know, that's a good transaction, but actually there are these other ones as well that we'd like to include as well, and that'll make it a really efficient process if you include those ones as well. And that's usually, I think, a fairly smooth process there. Mm-hmm. And then there may be other non-transfer pricing collateral issues, and that cuts across various different types of tax issues. They could be issues associated with withholding tax, some of the other types of tax provisions, such as concerns around the structure of the transactions, which comes up now and then. I wouldn't say it's a frequent occurrence, but they do come up. And I think just to kind of echo some of the comments that Glenn mentioned, which is that if there is uncertainty around these issues, it's best to deal with them, right? So, you know, we're not in a world where you can, I think, expect not to have a tap on the shoulder at some point if there is some kind of uncertainties around that. So if you're coming to the program and there are these other tax issues, it's best to deal with them, and that'll provide you the certainty that you know both you and the tax office wants.
Because there's a trade-off there, isn't there, Vi, in terms of the breadth of issues that might be covered, but also the certainty you might get and the benefit out of that that comes with it. And I imagine on the tax office side, as there's broader issues that may not be TP collateral type issues, then there would be others that would need to be involved with more specialist knowledge to consider those as part of the program.
Yeah, that's right. And that's some of the things that we've tried to introduce through the governance process, in particular the entry panel. And I do want to clarify the entry panel, that process in early engagement is not to resolve those other issues. Some of those issues are quite complex and will require more time. The purpose of that panel is really to assess, are there any particular hurdles? Are there any particular hurdles related to those collateral issues that would prevent the admission of the applicant into the APA program? And what we found that I'd say in the vast majority of situations that that isn't a hurdle, but it also means that some of those things do require attention, and how we deal with those issues is a conversation that we have with the client.
Fine. Just from a practical point of view, if it's been identified up front, there's certain collateral issues that need to be worked through, maybe withholding tax. Maybe there's been a transfer of IP, let's just say, for example. Just interested in understanding from the ATO point of view operationally, let's call it the plain vanilla TP matters and the collateral issues sort of get looked at in parallel, or do you tend to want to address those collateral issues first before you sort of move towards, you know, questions of pricing and so forth?
Yeah, I guess it really depends on the nature of the collateral issues. So if they don't directly impact on the pricing question, mm-hmm. or the profit allocation question, then they don't need to be necessarily tethered to one another. Mm-hmm. But where they are inherently or intrinsically linked, that is where you do run into difficulties around whether you can proceed with the APA without addressing those collateral issues themselves. And they naturally are tied to structuring questions around, are you actually pricing the right thing, right? So if there's a question around, well, actually, we do have concerns about this particular structure, and maybe the thing that we're looking at is actually not the right thing that we should be looking at in the program, and we should be looking at this other thing. Now, if that weren't addressed, we would be entering into the program and talking about a transaction that is not the right transaction, and that'd be an investment of resources from the office, the client, our treaty partner, and we're talking about something that may intrinsically change over time. So that's why we try to categorize and we try to at least draw out those principles in our recommendations. And I'd say that's the key distinction point, really.
Okay. Okay. And Jared, had a slightly different view. I mean, you're going into the program to get a transfer pricing answer, right? So that's your goal. And you've got these collateral issues. And some of them, as Vi's mentioned, are entwined into the question of pricing, right? So it's likely they're going to be swept up and resolved because they're intrinsic to the pricing question, right? There'll be other collateral issues that, in your view, right, are not that relevant for the pricing question. But collateral issues will slow the process down, right? They're there, they're going to be addressed, you're going to manage them, it takes time and effort. Right, and so that's part of your front-end management. You need to work out what you think of the issues that are important and germane for the APA process and what's not. You don't have to explain what you believe are collateral issues. It's up for the ATO to identify them. You got to think about the need for speed. Some of them you may wish to openly engage on. Others you may leave it to the ATO if they wish to engage on them. But you've also got to just think about the need for speed and getting resolution and what's the best strategy to do that, and if collateral issues are a part of that, inherently and integrated into that, then you need to get on the front foot and actually resolve them pretty quick. There's no point those issues unfolding when you're halfway through that process. That's going to lead to a lot of time consumption and unnecessary delays.
Yeah, I think the point I would add on that is I do think it's in most taxpayers' interest to be proactive around, particularly if it's relatively clear that there's going to be a collateral issue that's going to be somewhat connected to the cross-border transaction. Again, this probably goes back to the whole idea of transparency and trust. I think where you're able to, because I think we always keep in mind what the ATO would expect in terms of our awareness, especially if you've also got an advisor that's involved in the process. I think it's important to sort of think widely about what matters could be relevant, and sort of to table them as a way of sort of moving the APA more efficiently. I think the second thing also is just in terms of any preparation work that's needed in order to explain the taxpayer's position in relation to those matters, because if it's if you're having issues that are sort of surfacing later in the process, that could, in addition to the fact that you've got an ATO sort of review of those matters, but even the furnishing of information pertaining to those matters can take time if you're not doing the sort of the legwork at the beginning of the exercise. One thing I was just going to actually bring up, I assume you got the slides, the slides still up, but it was just around the know my industry well. You had this on the side of corporates, and one of the things I see as a trend, given that when we talk about transfer pricing, we're in the framework of the Tax Act, but at the same time we're often dealing with a lot of commercial issues, particularly relevant from a pricing or from a profit outcomes perspective. I think there's definitely a trend towards, from an advisor perspective, clients are expecting advisors to have both that tax expertise but also industry knowledge. So this idea of knowing my industry well, I just wanted to get via your thoughts about, sort of how does the ATO approach, for example, industry knowledge, right? And then also, what's the expectation from the tax office in terms of what the client and the advisors are meant to be bringing as part of that conversation in an APA?
Yeah, when we deal with transfer pricing issues, understanding commercial context and business drivers is super important. to get to arrive at the appropriate profit allocation. So it's an important point. Now, the office, as you can appreciate, it's an Australian tax office, so we're tax experts rather than industry experts. We do have teams that deal with particular industries, and we still do have that. So banking and finance is a particular industry where we have industry expertise. Energy and resources is another one. But the fact of the matter is that we are tax experts, and we won't be able to cover every single industry. And we don't have specific industry teams for every single industry. I think it's important for applicants to the program to understand that. And when you do come to the application process, to keep that in mind and understand that that will be part of the conversation, in particular if you're part of a particularly nascent sector or a nascent industry. Do come to the application process with a view of helping the education process. Mm. So anything that you can do to help the tax office come up to speed around the industry and do that early, that'll expedite the process, avoid any misunderstandings along the way. So that's, you know, I think particularly important for us.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that's something that we've often found. I think there are times where I found that clients are sort of probably have an awareness of, say, for example, the tax office engagement with other entities in their industry, and I think there's almost sometimes a presumption that well, if they've looked at company X, Y, and Z potentially, then there's all this knowledge that's already there. But I do think that in an APA or any other product, really, there's an opportunity for the client to spend to explain sort of their position, their story, the facts as they see it. Obviously, to be able to substantiate it, but just, you know, rather than relying on what's happened in maybe or the story that's been explained by other companies. But that it's there's almost like dual aspects to it. There's an element of education around the business, but there's also about, I think, just generally the industry in which the company operates. You know, like the market factors, the dynamics that are occurring, sort of and so forth. Because I do think that even within industries, there can often be sort of nuances depending on sort of the position that a company plays within that industry.
Maybe just building on that industry lens, also the size lens. So, like medium and emerging market, via are they part of the program, open for business, or are they too small? What's the lens on that?
Yeah, so we've been quite targeted in our language around the recommendations, which is that we want significant transactions. And what do we mean by significant? That doesn't necessarily mean big transactions. So it's important for you, it's important for us, but what we will say is that significant does not mean that, let's say you've got $100 million of cross-border transaction and you come and say, well, we want to cover $30 million of that $100 million. To us, that doesn't seem to make sense, that you'd only want to cover a smaller proportion of your cross-border dealings. So we do want to cover a higher proportion if we are going to engage on the APA process itself, and that you know, the same principle applies for companies with smaller transactions as well. So if you're a company with a smaller turnover, so long as we're covering a higher proportion of your related party dealings, that's what's most important. We did kind of put in the recommendations that there is, an absolute number. So we're an organisation with finite resources like everyone else. So we do want to make sure that it's not like a really small dollar transaction. In that instance, it probably would not make a good investment of resources for us, but also for the client, to be perfectly honest, because entering into the program requires a certain level of resource investment from the client's perspective as well.
Do you have a question on the app? Can applicants help if they're able to point up or point to things they know are different in their industry? if they understand themselves what is different in those, that industry.
Yeah, I mean, those distinguishing factors are pertinent for profit allocation. So there's differences within an industry group itself. So there can be subparts within an industry as well, different profit or value drivers in that sub-industry categorisation, but also the position that that particular firm is in that particular sector. So again, that drives different business motivations as well. So if you're an emerging or high growth entity, you know, that's a relevant factor, as opposed to being an incumbent where you're kind of got low growth and stability in terms of what you're doing. So I think it's, you know, both those factors, which is both industry, sub-industry, and also pertinent factors that relate to you as an industry firm as well.
Yeah, no, look, I would echo that. I think when we talk about industry, again, what how do we define it? Like, how broadly do we define an industry? You can have something like pharmaceutical industry. You know, do you looking at the one? Do you looking at companies that are selling patented ethical products versus, say, generic products? You know, are there differences between it? You know, if you look at a consumer products business, is it one that's already well established overseas and there's sort of almost like a network effect in terms of brand awareness, or something that's having to be more launched in the local market? You know, depending on the sort of size, scale and portfolio of products that are being brought in, what sort of bargaining power does the company have in terms of getting access to sales channels? You know, there's a raft of issues that could potentially be relevant. I mean, we could literally talk an hour for just on that. And I think that's something that that context is very, very important, because I think there's sometimes a danger of trying. You know, when you're describing a business, it can sound a little bit too generic. And I think it's really important to make sure that the relevant information, the relevant facts about the business, and sort of its position in the market. Where are its dependencies? Where are the real risks? And just sort of where it's at in that sort of growth and maturity phase, I think can be quite critical in then translating that into then what's the position that you're seeking to apply for.
I was going to add, like, so on this point and the information that you bring to the office, what's really important for us is that it's not just a description, or sometimes called like a narrative around your position or the industry that you operate in. It's not just a description, but really to substantiate that as well. So if you're a growth entity, well, here's our revenue growth, here's our projections, this is our strategy around growth. If you're an incumbent, yes, we've been in the Australian market for X number of years. Or let's say you're an incumbent overseas, but you're new to the Australian market. Again, like, to substantiate that, because that really does shortcut questions. So, you know, and I think the fact that we ask questions, it's not because, you know, we don't trust what you're saying, but it's part of the process, which is for us just to validate that, right? So don't misread that as saying, oh, we're asking further questions. It's part of our due diligence, which is to validate some of those comments. So if you do come already with those things substantiated, it just kind of shortcuts the process and just makes it a lot more efficient.
I just want to talk about APAs and actually in the context of cars. So if I look at cars, when you look at sort of the risk ratings or levels of assurance across the different categories, transfer pricing can often be one of the more difficult areas to get a high level of assurance, particularly because as a review product, there's only so much time that can be spent on the exercise. So, you know, just wanted to sort of see what the ATO's considerations would be around companies that are looking to pursue APAs as part of their overall strategy towards getting towards high assurance, because certainly there's it looks like there's a carrot for taxpayers to be moving towards that, given how much time and they're going to be spending with the tax office, and sort of in the years to come. So just want to get your thoughts around how does that sort of factor into consideration as a case, and just where the taxpayer should be sort of bringing that forward.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question, Jason. And it was one of the things actually that we have on the screen there, which is that the APA program doesn't operate in isolation to the other compliance initiatives that we have in the market. And obviously the Top 1000 program and CARS are part of that. And I think the key question that I'll kind of try to draw out here is that what is the uncertainty that you're trying to address, right? So if you've gone through a CAR process and you found that you haven't gotten the type of the level of assurance that you want, and you want to get that level of assurance, what are the pathways? And there are kind of various different pathways, which is that what's the feedback that you got during the CAR process? What are the things that you needed to improve on? What are the other options available out there, right? So if we talk about the PCGs that we have out there, if it's a financing transactions, if you've got clear markers there, if it's a inbound distribution arranger, there's markers there. There's also the options available around white zone assessments in some of those PCGs. So it's really up to the client to think about what level of certainty they're looking for. Obviously, we want everyone to be in an area where you have high assurance, and we understand that it sometimes can be hard to get that high assurance for transfer pricing, particularly through an assurance product. And APAs are definitely an avenue for you to get that high assurance. Obviously, if you've got an APA, you've got certainty on it, we've got agreement on it, and that'll give you the high assurance. But also, I think that's the context, right? What's the type of certainty that you want? You got to weigh that up. The APA program, we've got an inclination towards significant transactions where we think there's going to be where you're at genuine risk of double taxation. That lends itself to bilateral types of APAs, because we're looking to resolve that, and we're looking to address that for the client, but also for us and our treaty partner. And that's the context where, if you're coming out of a CAR, what's the feedback you got? Then you've got to weigh that up as to what's the best avenue for you to get to the high assurance, because we do want that high assurance, particularly for transfer pricing, which we know is something that can be difficult to attain through that CAR process.
Okay. I have lots of corporates that may not be the big end of town, right? So they are thinking, I'd like to get assurance because I want to get my risks covered in my return. I'm thinking about going and talking to the ATO to do an APA. Their questions are, who do we go and talk to? And the other one is, you mentioned the unilateral, right? So unilateral, you're dealing with one authority only. You're trying to get assurance from the ATO. Bilateral, it's the ATO and the other tax authority, right? IRS or IRAS or HMRC or whoever. And they've got limited resource, so they're thinking about, I prefer to do a unilateral APA because then I just have to deal with one authority and it's going to be quicker. What observations do you have in that space? Is you mentioned before that maybe there's a trend for less UAPAs, or UAPAs are stable, but the growing demand for bilaterals. Is the ATO still open for unilateral APAs? Is that still going to be a major part of the program moving forward, particularly for the medium and emerging space? So,
yeah. So first thing I want to dispel is that we're definitely not saying no to unilaterals. We're open for business. But the context of unilaterals, and we've tried to hopefully make this nuanced in our recommendations, is it's a matter of prioritisation and resourcing. As I said earlier, the tax office has a finite amount of resources, and we did want to make it clear that where there is an applicant where we've got genuine risk of double taxation and it's a bilateral, we think those things would kind of push them up in terms of prioritisation. Unilaterals, I've got to say, there hasn't been a single unilateral that we've said no to in the application process, right? So we're definitely still considering unilaterals. But I think if you come for a unilateral, expect to have the question asked, why is it not a bilateral, right? So if you've come for a unilateral and you think you're at risk and there's uncertainty here and there's a risk of double taxation, well, we think, well, in that instance, it would make more sense that you're covering off that risk on a bilateral basis. Mm. Now, it may be with a non-treaty partners, and clearly that makes sense for a unilateral, or there might be particular circumstances where the unilateral still makes sense, right? And as I said, look, we have definitely accepted unilaterals, and there's been no APA that we've turned down because it's a unilateral. But we still want to have the conversation. So I think that's the key point. We still want to have the conversation. Can it be a bilateral? Does it make sense to be a bilateral? Because that's our natural inclination. Any other audience questions? Yes, we've got an audience question there, if we can have a microphone.
Thanks. I was just curious to hear your input as to kind of how many taxpayers you see where it's very hard to reach a consensus, either if it's bilateral, particularly probably more, you know, you're negotiating with another country, or even unilateral, where potentially they just pull out of the program because there's no consensus that can be agreed on, and how often that kind of occurs in practice.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd say extremely, extremely rare. And we've even tried to improve that process even further. So what you'll find is in our entry criteria, one of the factors we have there is that if you've come to the office with a proposal where we don't think it's something that we're likely to agree to and there's no pathway forward, we're not going to accept you into the program, because then that would not be a good investment for the client or us. But that's probably also a reflection of the nature of the conversation, because if it's something that we don't think that we're going to agree to and the client's not willing to move on those things, again, that's, you know, that shows an inability to work with us as well. So, you know, that's more around the behavioural issues as well. And in terms of, I think part of your question is, has there been any scenarios where the client's withdrawn from process? Not that I'm aware of, right? So now, having said that, as Glenn said, the program goes back. Australia was actually the first country to ever do an APA. That was back in 1991. So we're kind of trailblazers there. So I haven't gone back that far. I'm not that old. I think, at least the best of my knowledge, no one's ever pulled out. But we have exited taxpayers. There is one that I'm aware of in the last couple of years. Prior to that, my understanding, it's been very limited. So I think it's probably three or four in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years, something like that. So it's really rare. We try to avoid it. Again, we've improved the governance processes in order to avoid such situations, because as you can appreciate, when those things occur, it's a really difficult conversation because the client's invested all the resources. Tax officers invested all the resources. We don't want to do it either. We don't want to have to exit either. And also our treaty partners in some instances as well. So there's a lot of investment there, and we never want to be in that situation. So it's better to have those conversations up front. It's better that we're both on the terms of the same page in terms of at least these are the parameters, and yes, we see a pathway forward, and we see a pathway to arriving at a resolution to those conversations.
Just one additional element to that story is the negotiators from the ATO and also the other authority, that they're actually sort of independent of the normal field staff. So there is a competent authority unit. It's actually a delegated responsibility. They're actually quite independent, and they are the ones that do the negotiation. And that's across all of the different jurisdictions. And that's very conducive, actually, to bringing together and trying to get that resolution that Vi's mentioned. And all of my experiences, they have been, always a resolution. I can't recall one case that I've done over the last 25 years where there has not been a resolved answer. Sometimes it takes a bit of time to get there, but resolution nevertheless. So,
last call for any questions. Oh, one has snuck through online. What if there is a disagreement with the client in the course of an APA? How does the ATO deal with this dilemma?
Well, it depends on the nature of the disagreement. If it's, I'd say that we are constantly engaging with clients and advisors, and we may not always share the exact identical view, but I'd say for the large part, we're all heading towards the same direction, which is ultimate resolution of the question at hand. So again, it comes to disagreement, right? So if it's a fundamental disagreement, we want to have that up front because we want to know ahead of time around, well, these are the parameters that we think we can get to an outcome. And if it's a question around profit allocation and pricing, I'd say I'm very confident we're going to get there, right? But if it's a question around, actually, we think this is the transaction, but the tax office thinks, no, we don't think that's actually what's actually happening here. We think it's a different transaction that we're talking about. Then those are kind of fundamental areas where it's much harder to resolve. And, you know, those are the questions that we need to resolve upfront, because if we can't resolve that, then we're talking about two different things, and it's not really a question around pricing or profit allocation anymore. It's a fundamental question around what is it that we're looking to address? What difficulty are we looking to address? And that question may not even be an Article 9 or a transfer pricing question. It may be a completely separate question. And where that's the case, then, invariably, I guess that's in the category of collateral issues, and we want to make sure that we address that before we enter into the APA program.
As you said before, Vi, it's really being thoughtful around what's the briefing material and how you present the facts up front. So you want to get those questions up early so you can deal with them.
Yeah. All right, I think we've covered our time.
I think we have. Just before we thank our speakers, a few final messages. So this was obviously a great way to conclude the masterclass today, having such thought-provoking discussion around what is really a very intensive process through APAs. So thank you to all of our presenters today who've given their time so generously to be part of the event. We kindly ask that everybody here takes a moment to complete the feedback survey, both for this session and the overall event feedback. You'll find the survey link on the session page in the attendee hub, and we thank you in advance for the feedback. The overall event survey is also sitting on the main dashboard of the attendee hub. I'd just like to thank Insight Software for their sponsorship of the event today. They were here with us today. And also time to announce the winner of the attendee hub game. So congratulations to Donna Emsies from HLB Man Judd. Where is Donna? No? But Donna obtained the highest score on the game, and so the tax agent will be in touch for organising the prize. Thanks, everybody, for your participation. We hope you found value in all of the sessions, and a reminder that recordings for all the event sessions will be available shortly via the virtual attendee hub. I'd like to also acknowledge the time and effort of the organising committee. Thank you to all of my fellow members on that committee, and thank you to the Tax Institute for helping put on such a great event today. We'll be having some networking drinks in the foyer, which will start immediately after the session. I hope to see you all there. And finally, would you please put your hands together and thank our speakers here for such a great session. Vi, Jason and Glenn, thank you for today.